Chaitanyam sabitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamaiham dadati svapadantikam vandeham shigaro shiyuta parakamalam shigaram vaishnavam scha shirupam sagrajatam sahagana raganatam vidham tam sajivam sarvaitam savadutam virajana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakan Vitam Cha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Vinabando Dugatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchen Gorangi Radhe Vrinda Vineshri Vrishabhanu Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchatapa Trubhyascha Kripa Sinubhi Vicha Padidana Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedvaiti Gadadhar Shivasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 15. The Pandavas retire timely. Text number 47. And 48 is there also, but I think we'll just read 47, make things more simple. Tadyano dikritiktaya bhaktya
Tadyano dikritiktaya
bhaktya Vishuddha dishana pare
Vishuddha dishana pare
Jasmin narayana pade
Jasmin narayana pade
Ekanta Mateo Gatim. I'll read the next verse. Avapura Dura Vapamte Asadira Vishayadmavi Viduta Kamasham Stanam Viradenatmanai Vahi Tat. It's not a very difficult one to pronounce at all. Let's try it again. Try it. Be brave. Tat. Wasn't that difficult. That. Dhyana.
Positive meditation.
Utritaya.
Being free from.
Bhaktya,
bhaktya,
by a devotional attitude. Vishuddha, purified. Dishana,
by intelligence.
Hooray,
unto
the transcendence.
Tasmin,
in that. Narayana,
Narayana,
the personality of Godhead.
Shri Krishna,
Pade,
under
the lotus feet. Ekanta Mataya,
of
those who are fixed in the Supreme.
Who is one?
Betim,
destination.
Avapu,
attain.
Duravapam,
very
difficult to obtain.
Te,
by them.
Asadvi,
by the materialists.
Vishaya,
Atmavi,
absorbed in material needs.
Viduta,
washed off.
Kalmasa,
material contamination,
Stanam, abode, Virajena, without material passion, Atmana, Eva, by the self-same body, he certainly. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is obtained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of the Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be obtained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed off of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. Please repeat. Thus, by a pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky, which is ruled over by the Supreme Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is obtained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord, without deviation. This abode of the Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be obtained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, a person freed from the three modes of material nature, namely goodness, passion, ignorance, and situated in transcendence, can reach the highest perfection of life without change of body. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Hari Bhakti Vilas says, the person, whoever he may be, and obtain the perfection of a twice-born Brahman by undergoing the spiritual disciplinary actions under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, exactly as a chemist can turn gun metal into gold by chemical manipulation. It is therefore the actual guidance that matters in the process of becoming a Brahman, even without change of body, or in going back to Godhead without change of body. Srila Jiva Goswami remarks that the word he used in this connection positively affirms this truth, and there is no doubt about this factual position. The Bhagavad Gita 14:26 also affirms the statement of Srila Jiva Goswami, and the Lord says that anyone who executes devotional service systematically without deviation can obtain the perfection of Brahman by surpassing the contamination of the three modes of material nature. And when the Brahman perfection is still more advanced by the self-same execution of devotional service, there is no doubt at all that one can attain the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, without change of body. As we have already discussed in connection with the Lord's returning to his abode without a change of body. These are the verses again. Tadyano drikdaya bhakya vishuddha vishana pare tasmin raina pade ekanta matayogatim avapura dura vapam te asadvira vishayatnavi vidudha kamashastanam virajenatmanaivahi. Thus, by pure consciousness, due to constant devotional remembrance, they attain the spiritual sky which is ruled over by the Supreme Lord Narayan, Lord Krishna. This is obtained only by those who meditate upon the one Supreme Lord without deviation. This abode of Lord Sri Krishna, known as Goloka Vrindavan, cannot be obtained by persons who are absorbed in the material conception of life. But the Pandavas, being completely washed of all material contamination, attain that abode in their very same bodies. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasutundeve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pasukatya De Siddharna. This idea of obtaining Krishna's abode in one's self, same body, doesn't mean that when we leave, when at the time of death, we take this body back to the spiritual world with us. It means that, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, anadi vama nirgunadvat paramatmayam aviyam sharira stopi konteya na karoti na nalipyate, that those who can see with the eyes of eternity can see that the soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of material nature. Despite contact with the material body or Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything nor is he entangled. Presently, we're not actually in the material world in the sense that the soul can't really become material because he's transcendental. But we're neither in the spiritual world. Actually, we are in the spiritual world. We're in the part of the spiritual world which is the prison. And here, the soul is not thinking about Krishna's pastimes. He's simply meditating upon being chastised by the illusory energy in the form of whatever is happening to the body, whatever is happening to the mind, whatever conception of life he has, wherever his false ego is, that's what he's experiencing. Sometimes we're experiencing this gross and subtle body that we're presently in, and sometimes at night we're dreaming something else. But there's a possibility of coming to the transcendental realm of experience. Because it says that there's no difference between Krishna and Krishna's name. There's no difference between hearing about Krishna and actually associating with Krishna. Everything about Krishna is absolute. And even this world, when we're purified, then we'll also see this world as Krishna's pastime. Actually, for the conditioned soul, it's easier to see this world as Krishna's pastime than to try to understand how Krishna's pastimes are going on in the internal energy. Therefore, in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it mentions that it's more valuable for the conditioned soul to hear about Krishna's pastimes and the external energy, especially the Purusha incarnations, which include Paramatma, who is trying to help us become self-realized, to hear their pastimes than it is to hear Krishna's pastimes in the internal energy. Generally, the conditioned soul, when he hears Krishna's pastimes in the internal energy, he tries to understand them in relationship to his activities in the external energy. Prabhupada gives the example in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that one man, his wife was named Radha, and when he was hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, every time he heard about Radha and Krishna's pastimes, he remembered his relationship with his wife, Radha. Or as you've heard the other story, that there was one lady, she had a goat named Radha. Very beautiful goat, had a very beautiful beard. And one day Radha passed away, and she was heartbroken. So depressed that she decided to go to Bhagavat Saptaha. And at the Bhagavat Saptaha, when Sadhu was giving the lecture about Radha and Krishna's pastimes for 1 week, and he happened to have a beard that looked exactly like her goat's beard. So every time she glanced at this man, the sadhu giving the lecture, immediately she remembered her goat. And she began to cry. And when she heard the name Radha, she remembered her deceased goat and also began to cry. So all week long, looking at the man, hearing about Radha and Krishna, she was crying all the time. Finally, at the end, this man was so impressed by her devotion. that he paid full dandavats in front of the 50,000 people asking for her mercy, saying that you're such a great devotee, every time you see a sadhu, you begin to cry in ecstasy, and every time you hear the name of Radha, you are crying in ecstasy. Please make me your disciple. So she said, you don't understand. I'm attracted to you because your beard looks exactly like my dead ghost beard. And Radha was the name of my dead goat. So whenever you said Radha, I remember that beautiful little goat. And I begin to cry in separation from my goat. So similarly, without transcendental experience, what can we understand about Radha and Krishna? Maybe something. Krishna will reveal something to us. But generally, we have much more experience in the external energy. We're fully aware of what lust, anger, and greed mean. Whether we want to give them up or not, that's a different thing. But from lust, anger, and greed, Krishna says, Trividan arakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodha tatalovas tasmat etam trayam tyajet. That there are three gates leading to hell. One time Prabhupada was in England, and the reporters were asking Prabhupada, you were talking in some lecture about hell, so where is hell? And then Prabhupada said, England is hell. Prahlad Maharaj said, actually in this world there's no enemy except for the uncontrolled mind. So the uncontrolled mind means that the soul becomes attached to some idea. And therefore, the more he feeds dovetails his desires with the illusory desires of lust, anger, greed, and the whole illusory conception that I am this body, and that I'm the hero in some kind of drama that's going on that I've created. The more one feeds this conception of life, the more the mind becomes bewildered. We hope that somehow or another, by some arrangement that I'm planning, that my mind is arranging for me, that I'm going to find peace and happiness. But actually what we find is more and more agitation. That's why it's considered uncontrolled. Adanta gobhira vishitam tamizram punak punas charavita charavanana adandagobhya. If we serve the senses, they'll simply demand more and more from us. We serve the mind, then there's no limit to the mental concoctions we can come up with. And if we focus it upon Krishna, then all these illusory conceptions, they gradually evaporate. Just like when the sun comes up in the morning, then automatically all the ghosts, all the mist, all the fog, everything dissipates, and then one can actually see things as they are. And one's determination, one's real consciousness, one's real mind becomes fixed upon Krishna, rather than being uncontrolled by the illusory energy. Therefore, this lust will create greed. If lust is satisfied, then naturally one becomes greedy to satisfy it more. And eventually we'll become frustrated because this body can only eat so much, there's only 24 hours a day to sleep. Eventually we'll get frustrated because we won't be able to satisfy the senses as much as they're demanding. And then the result is where we become a victim in our minds, that somehow or another I was a good person, but people just don't understand me. Just like Tuvan Pete in Chicago in the 1920s, he was a famous killer, assassin for the gangsters. But he thought he was a good person. And he had a reputation. Whoever he killed, he would always kill with two guns. One day he was on the lover's lane with his girlfriend, having his romantic leela, And one unfortunate policeman disrupted the Leela and shone a flashlight into the car, thinking that there was a great apparat. Tugan Pete took his gun and shot the policeman. And in order to protect his reputation, he got out of the car, took the policeman's gun and shot him again. Unfortunately, the other policeman didn't understand this Leela of Tugan Pete. And therefore they chased him into a hideout and there was a shootout. And before he was killed, Tugan Pete wrote a letter to his mother and wrote, "I'm actually a nice person. People just don't understand me. Please take care of the cat, your son Petey." So everyone thinks they're a nice person. Everyone thinks they're engaged in some kind of leela in this mature world. And if there's any disruption, we blame it on someone else. Then we forget what the whole situation is, what actually led us into the difficulty. Well, we just blame fate, we blame someone sneezing, and we just happen to, by accident, walk by, and these vicious germs just flew into us and attacked this beautiful, innocent person called myself. And somehow or another I got sick. Although I'm completely innocent, and I don't deserve anything bad, I only deserve good, but somehow or another, this unfortunate, by chance, as everything's going on by chance, even a beautiful, wonderful, elegant, magnificent person as myself, somehow or another, by chance, got sick. And then, since everything comes about by chance, it doesn't really matter how I lose my intelligence, because I have little intelligence to understand things properly. I just do whatever I feel like. That's the most important thing, is to satisfy how I feel, to satisfy my desires. And that will make my life more perfect. And so, Krishna says, he falls into the material pool and more and more strongly identifies oneself with the gross and subtle material body, and is guaranteed to get some kind of body, not necessarily in the human form of life, in order to continue on with the process of sense gratification, serving the unbridled senses. But Krishna says, "Etera vimukta kondiya tamo dvara srivir nara acharat yat manashaya sato yati paramgatim." That anyone who etera vimukta kondiya becomes free from these three gates to hell, to the mode of ignorance, performs acts which are conducive to self-realization, and thus he attains the transcendental destination. In other words, we don't have to learn deep, deep philosophy, understand the intricate rasa of Radha and Krishna, and vibhava, and anubhava, and vyabhichari bhava, stani bhavas. We don't have to understand all this exactly, you know, what rasa goes is compatible with Madhurya rasa, and the seven different types of indirect mellows, hasya rasa, etc. No, we just have to get free from lust, anger, and greed. That's the good beginning. And that's very simple. Krishna says, dhyayato vishayam pumsa. And in this material world, people feel that they need something. And so they're looking around, what do I need? And usually they're taking some flower and going, she loves me, she loves me not. She loves me, she loves me not. It gets down to that. Or he loves me, or he loves me not. It's not really so complicated. But when we become entangled in the illusory energy, it becomes more and more complicated. Ato griha kshetra sutapta vidhara janasya yoho yam maham ameti. It becomes more and more complicated as we become more and more dependent on the material energy, and we have to engage more and more in trying to acquire all the things which are necessary to think, quote, necessary. that whole story of how the Brahmin and the underwear, and how he acquired, after having it stolen by a mouse, he acquired a cat, then he acquired a cow, then he acquired a wife and children and a house and a car and two jobs just to protect his underwear. And finally, he realized the only solution is to renounce his underwear. And when his underwear fell off, everything went away too. So, in order to protect something, you know, insignificant, we wind up creating a whole drama in the material world, and we think we're a good person because ultimately, you know, we got something to eat. Such a big, big drama. The Himalayas are rumbling, and there's a big disturbance. Everyone's wondering what the Himalayas are going to give birth to. Everyone's coming to visit the Himalayas to see what magnificent creature the Himalayas will give birth to. And after some time, a mouse pops out. A whole world full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Therefore, rather than meditating upon how we're going to create a wonderful world of sense enjoyment, we should meditate upon Krishna. The more one becomes convinced that if I focus my attention on Krishna and I give my love to Him, then all my desires will naturally be satisfied, because I have a desire for awareness, to understand why I'm suffering, how I can become happy. This is the knowledge we really want. Modern society gives us an education to convince us that the reason why you're not happy is that you haven't developed your animal propensities sufficiently. Somehow or another, you're hung up in being a human being. But if you can simply overcome this misconception that you're something other than simply an animal, then your life will become full of perfect sense gratifications, one after another. That if you can eat like a pig, if you can sleep like a bear, if you can have sex like a pigeon and defend yourself like a tiger, then your life is becoming more and more divine. Unmotivated, uninterrupted, causeless sense gratification. That there's nothing between you and the objects of the senses. There's no intelligence, there's no conscience, it's simply spontaneous. So at the end of this yuga, people will completely be absorbed in spontaneous sense gratification. You say, see someone you like to eat, in the middle of the street, you jump on him. Grab his throat with your teeth, rip out his throat, and begin your process of unalloyed, uninterrupted sense gratification. And all the other people, they'll join in. Thinking that this person must have good taste, let's get a little sample ourselves. So that's what the modern society is heading for. And indeed, we can see in the past insignificant number of years, what was considered abominable previously now has become completely normal. That, anyhow, we all know what's going on in Kali Yuga. We don't have to mention all the different aspects of it. And similarly, what's considered to be taboo nowadays will one day become completely normal. Even 20 years ago, I was in Denmark, and one devotee showed me a newspaper, and they were glorifying Denmark because it was the first country in the world where a father married his own son. And in Sweden, they had another article when I was in another newspaper, where it said the last taboo is becoming overcome. And the last taboo that they were overcoming in Sweden was the taboo of incest. So the animals, if we say you're an animal, we'd be insulting the animals in Kali Yuga. The animals wouldn't want to associate with such people because they would be afraid of getting contaminated. No self-respecting animal would ever be caught in a picture with such a person. Therefore, instead of going in that direction, the Hare Krishna movement is trying to inspire people to go in a completely different direction. And therefore, sometimes it appears that devotees are psychologically, mixed up, or what is the term for it?
Abnormal.
Well, I mean, everyone's. When you have two different conflicting ideas going on in your mind at the same time. Conflicted. Yeah, that's the word. The devotees are conflicted. Unlike the, you can see the devotees, they want to gratify their senses, but they're just holding back, and it appears that they're just, psychologically impaired because their real desires are not being fulfilled. And they're simply experiencing frustration and inhibition and whatever else. Unlike the materialists, when they feel like doing something, they just do it. And therefore, there's no psychological hang-ups or inhibitions. Yes, because they're 100% unalloyed animals, or less than animals. But the devotees, they have a little intelligence. They know they shouldn't do it. They don't know why they shouldn't do it. They really would like to do it, but they're afraid of doing it. They're afraid that maybe Krishna, he has his thunderbolt hidden away underneath his belt. And when as soon as we deviate, then there's this lightning bolt that comes and the poor devotee is fried. Krishna is especially watching his devotee. Ah, you rascal. Take this. Wouldn't chant Hare Krishna, huh? No, it's for our benefit. Actually, we have a little bit of intelligence, but we should cultivate enough intelligence so we actually understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, that we don't simply remain on the mental platform, hovering on the mental platform, waiting for the opportunity to fall off of it. No, we have to come to the intellectual platform, the conscious platform, so we actually see what's going on in this world, what's actually happening here. What's happening here will not be described by Time magazine, not least fully, by the newspapers or the radio or modern education. What's happening here is simply people being impelled by their lusty senses, anger, greed, delusion, bewilderment, forgetfulness, loss of intelligence, into creating more and more of a hellish world. And there's a few people, because somehow or another, by fortune, they had contact with some kind of religious principles, however vague they may have been. And they were a little reluctant to go to hell so quickly. They'd rather go to hell gradually. And then you have the Hare Krishnas, who are telling everyone you're not your body, and everyone feels rather insulted. I'm not my body. Yeah, of course I'm not. I'm the mind. And giving all kinds of philosophy about, everyone else is afraid and embarrassed to talk about God. Only the priest and, behind closed doors on Sunday in the temple or in the church with a few old ladies attending who can't hear what he's saying, he mentions the name of God. And then turns red out of embarrassment for using the three-letter word. Of course, because people don't know who God is, they don't know what His purpose is, they don't know what He's doing. I was reading some article that the scientists have discovered that there is a pattern in the universe. Just like, for instance, when you're doing design work on a computer, if you want to make a drawing, you have these programs, InDesign by Microsoft. So you may make some design on your computer, Illustrator. But you can only do it between two dots, and they have a grid. And you can only connect two dots together to form a line on the grid. You can't make your own grid. You have to use a grid on the computer. You're limited to what the computer can do. Similarly, they discover there's actually a grid in the universe, and that light and energy is just flowing on this grid. So the question is, who made the grid? Because the universe was created on the basis of the grid was there first, they discovered, and then the universe was created next. So now the question is, who created the grid? Who created the original computer design for the universe? They said that the universe is actually a simulated design. And then, of course, from there they can speculate who made the design. But they've concluded that if they have positive proof that there was a person behind the universe, scientifically. Now, of course, we know about the person who made the design. We know he's a person. First of all, we knew that. The Vedas knew that long ago, even without the scientists discovering it. And we know about the person. We know his address. We don't quite know his internet address yet. We know what he looks like. We know his friends. We know what he likes to eat. We know so many things about him. And this we're trying to convey to people. And we also know what he wants us to do and what he doesn't want us to do and why we're not aware of him and why we should become aware of him. We know the process of utilizing this current world that we're living in, which has been given to us, to utilize in Krishna service. So whatever we have now has been a gift from him. His body's a gift, our mind's a gift, our intelligence is a gift, the different material assets we have, they're all a gift from him, so that we can utilize it in the Sankirtan movement. And if we do that, then Krishna will reveal himself to us. And then, even in this lifetime, we can experience being back to the spiritual world, back to spiritual consciousness. We don't have to leave this body to enter into the spiritual world. We can be right in the spiritual world, right in the self-same body. Just like Srila Prabhupada, he was actually in the spiritual world. And therefore, he was carrying the spiritual world around with him wherever he went. And those who were a little perceptive, they were able to experience the spiritual world just by his association. That's what will spread the Hare Krishna movement. Not some technique of convincing people, trickery, selling books by trickery or something, or by having bigger temples than anyone else, or getting more money, or being more expertly organized. These things will help, but ultimately it really depends upon the purity of the devotees. How much they're actually allowing Krishna to shine through their hearts, not interfering by their own personal motivations. If they can actually let Krishna come through and shine through their hearts, then everyone will become attracted to the Krishna consciousness movement, because they'll see that these people are in ecstasy. They're actually experiencing transcendental pleasure, and it's coming from Krishna. It's not coming because they have more money than everyone else, they have more fame, more wealth, more material education. It's coming because they have more of Krishna than everyone else. And therefore people will be interested in what's the actual essence of what we're trying to distribute, which is Krishna. We're not trying to distribute our own personality, although even our own personality, if we're a devotee and utilizing our activities in devotional service, that is Krishna. We can even admire how Krishna is working with his body and mind and words to spread Krishna consciousness. We can see that I'm not doing it, it's Krishna is doing it, and how nicely Krishna is doing it, not how nicely we're doing it. We can be amazed by how much potency Krishna has. Even Prabhupada, he said in a lecture in 1972 in Vrindavan, he said, even the spiritual master, he doesn't consider himself to be a spiritual master. He simply considers himself to be a servant of his spiritual master. Because he knows that the Super Soul, by his mercy, he's reminding him of what his spiritual master has said. And when he gives those instructions to his followers, and he sees his followers are serving those instructions, then he learns from them how to become a better servant of his spiritual master. Because he doesn't think it's his instructions, he thinks it's his spiritual master's instructions, and therefore he learns from his disciples or followers how to better serve his spiritual master. Therefore he takes his followers as a kind of instructor for himself. This idea of somehow or another we're going to get a position in the material world where we're going to get above everyone else, that God himself comes to the material world so he can get a position in this world where he becomes a servant of everyone else. So the conditioned soul is trying to become the master and God is trying to become the servant. That's the difference between God and the conditioned soul. How to more deeply enter into the vision of how to properly serve Krishna and Krishna's servants in this world, and then we'll be in the spiritual world just by that endeavor. We don't need great wealth, we don't need anything material. All we need is a sincere desire and enough intelligence to learn the art, because it's not simply being humble, it's also learning the art of transcendental discrimination and expertise in our devotional service. That's the higher realm of pure devotional service. In any case, we have a great opportunity. Whatever we can do right now is all positive. When you're down, the only way is up. So in Kali Yuga, everyone is down, and there's one way up, back to the spiritual world, and we don't have to wait for the change of body. We should, in this very lifetime, Prabhupada wanted us to enter into the spiritual world, so that even at the hour of death, we realize we're not dying. We're simply changing our body from a material one, and simply going back to Krishna's pastimes. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Or comments, questions? Yes. Well, the best thing we can do is become ecstatic in Krishna consciousness. We become ecstatic in Krishna consciousness. Probably someone will ask us, you know, how did you become so ecstatic in Krishna consciousness? Then we can tell them. Everyone wants ecstasy. Everyone wants happiness and love and devotion. Everyone wants these things. But they need some examples so they become inspired to follow. Anything else? All right, so happy Rath Yatra. This is bringing Lord Jagannath, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada. They're bringing the conditioned souls, ourselves and everyone else who participate. That people may not even know what's going on, but because they're seeing Lord Jagannath, God himself, Therefore, they're making some spiritual advancement, and somehow or another they'll be caught up in going back to Vrindavan with Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada, and ourselves too. So today, many people will get an opportunity to get darshan of Lord Jagannath and begin their journey back to his eternal kingdom. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande ki jai.